to me, said Paul, if I do not proclaim the gospel. It's a commission. It's a trust. It's a calling. It's a privilege. It's an obligation. Woe to me if I don't proclaim it. Trinitarians like sermons in three parts, but today you're going to get a sermon in two parts. So let's look first at what does it mean to proclaim? What is proclamation? And we'll skip then to the second part. What's the gospel? Fundamentals today. Back to the fundamentals. To proclaim is to make known publicly. A synonym would be to declare, as in a declaration of independence. The hope was that that word would get across the ocean and to the ears of the king. And that the hope was that that word would inspire folks on this side of that ocean. A declaration for all, for the public, to hear, to receive, to act upon. A proclamation of the gospel. The gospel is not just for private enjoyment. It's for public consumption. The gospel belongs in the sanctuary, you're right about that, but it also belongs at the courthouse. The gospel belongs in the Sunday school room, but also in the high school cafeteria. We hope the gospel shows up once in a while at a session meeting, but we know it belongs at Wall Street too. The gospel's for the worship bulletin and for social media and billboards. The gospel's for all people in all places. The gospel's for everywhere. I think the gospel's even for the trees and the air we breathe and the ground we stand on and the water we drink and play in. I think the gospel's for salamanders and white-tailed deer too. I don't think that's a stretch. At the end of Mark's gospel in chapter 16, Jesus says, go into all the world and proclaim the gospel to the whole creation. I think that's just more than you and me. The gospel that Christians are compelled to proclaim, to declare, isn't just for us and here in religious times and spaces, but for all places, public places. It does remind me of a Doobie Brothers song in the 1970s. Come on, people, we're taking it to the streets. Caitlin said after the first service, that song's been playing in her head since the 9:30 service. I said, Caitlin, I'm just glad you've heard of that song. You know, if anybody still has it on 8-track, let me know after the service. I recall a retired professor of economics. He was at Bucknell University in northeastern PA until the University of Florida hired him away from us. So he went down to the University of Florida, had a successful teaching career, in fact, wrote the number 3 all-time economics textbook. So he made a lot of money. And he made a gift to our church of several kinds, but one of them he set up was a benevolence fund to help the poor. And he said, Ollie, I did that because I gave a lot of money to the University of Florida, and don't you know they didn't do with it what I told them they should. They're not getting another dollar of mine. And the older I get, the more I care about my home church and the people there, and I want to make a difference. Fine by me, I said. So he called me up angry one time when I was in my first year, and he said, Reverend Wagner, are you telling me there are no poor people in that town anymore? I said, oh, no, there are a lot of poor people here. There are a lot of folks struggling to make ends meet, and the church is doing all it can, so forth and so on. He said, well, I'm reading the annual report of the congregation. Can you explain to me why you spent $1,000 to help people in need, and there's still $18,000 in the bank? I couldn't, but I tell you this, my next 9 years there, I spent down that account before he got that report. The gospel is for the streets. It's to go public. It's to get out there and meet need and transform lives and touch with life and love. It comes from God, and it goes through you and me and Paul and Phoebe, and it goes out into public. We're not the destination. We are a touch point along the way. It's meant to be shared. A rabbi, a priest, and a pastor. Sounds like a joke, right? A rabbi, a priest, and a pastor. We're invited by the school district to go into the high school and to teach seniors there what their religious traditions, their various traditions, have to say about human sexuality. Ooh, I got your attention. And so the topic was sex, and each of these religious leaders was going to say, you know, this is what our tradition kind of says about it, and so forth and so on. And they said what you might expect a preacher and a priest and a rabbi to say. They talked about being made in the divine image of God and God making all things good and the gift of God's goodness to us and receiving that with thanksgiving, but also responsibility and the like. After they get done, students are allowed to ask questions. The first hand goes up, and a student says, getting ready to graduate from high school and enter the world, who were Adam and Eve? I think those congregations and those religious leaders realize maybe we've failed our young people. Because somehow the gospel, the good news of being created in the image of God and the good news of being children of God and the good news of Jesus redeeming us from sin, maybe that word hasn't gotten out there. Who are Adam and Eve? We failed to take the gospel out of the sanctuaries and given it to the streets. That's where it's needed. Faith is not for the faithful, it's for the world. It's the faithful's job to declare it, to proclaim it, to share it. What's that great Christmas hymn say? Go tell it on a mountain, over the hills, and everywhere. I don't think the church does such a great job of that. Teams huddle, but then they go out and they play the game, and they move it down the field, and they try to get it into the red zone, at least through the goalposts. I can't imagine an Olympic athlete training for all those years and flying over to Korea and being in uniform and not going out to compete, just staying back. I can't imagine that. Why would you go through all that work and not step onto the world stage? Put a demonstration out there of what you're all about. Jesus says, you're the light of the world. Don't hide the light. The world needs to see it and hear it, experience it. Let it shine, let it shine. And that's what Jesus did. He let his light shine, not just his words, but his deeds. I don't know about you, but when I was a little bit younger, I didn't like the miracle stories of Jesus. They just confounded me too much, just too unbelievable and out of this world. The older I get, the more I see the miracles of Jesus, the deeds that he did, feeding the hungry, healing the sick, stopping the bleeding, opening the eyes of the blind, helping the lame to walk. That the miracles of Jesus are touching people with good works. He's making whole that which is broken. He's not just talking about the kingdom. He's doing it. He's doing the good work. And that proclamation, that word gets out. In fact, the whole city's at his door saying, help me, help me, help me. I'll say it one more time. Proclamation is for the public. When you and I gather in worship, it's not for the club. It's not for the private members. It's for... But this is public worship. It's just that the other 60,000 people that live here aren't here today. But it's for the public. If you want to take a message public, the best way to do it, a friend of mine in sales says, is you build a relationship. You create a relationship of trust. You heard what Beverly read. To this kind of person, I'll be like them. To this kind of person, I'll be like them. To that person, I'll do that. I'll do whatever I need to do. I'll be whatever the people need me to be in order to win that sale, that customer, that have that product purchased and received. And the product, the message that we take is more valuable than any Super Bowl commercial. So what is that product? What is that gospel that we're declaring and proclaiming and living and sharing? Woe is me, says Paul, if I don't proclaim the gospel. Well, you know the gospel is at least four literary books. It's Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. We call those gospels. But really, gospel is not a literary form. Gospel is a word that translated means very simply good news. In fact, Mark opens his gospel with this: the beginning of the good news of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. The good news is about Jesus, and it is good. This news is not bad. This news is not lukewarm. This news is not recycled old news. It's new, and it's about Jesus, and it's good. And proclaiming it is what Jesus himself is all about in his words and in his deeds. The first thing he asks people to do is as he preaches and teaches and goes about teaching and healing and casting out demons, as he says, believe the good news. The good news is about defeating sin. The good news is about living not in fear of death. The good news is that God intends good and has dreams of justice and peace for this world. Jesus has defeated sin and death. That's good news for the world. That has the power to make all things new. Jesus is risen from the dead and with us always. That makes new creatures of us. The gospel means that you don't have to be afraid. You can live with peace. The gospel means you're not an outcast. You're a beloved child who's welcomed into the family. The gospel means you're not lost. You have direction. It means you don't need to be downhearted. You're offered joy. The gospel brings comfort to the suffering, healing to the sick, wholeness to the broken. The gospel touches every facet of our lives. You don't need to live with guilt for all the times you've messed up. There's forgiveness. And there's sight given to those who are blind. There's food and drink for the hungry and thirsty. There's hope for the despairing. There's direction for the confused. There's strength for the weak. I went to the Candler School of Theology last week for a conference. And one of the presenters there said that the group called the nuns, that is the people who are increasing in number in our country, I think into the 30 percentile now, the folks who want nothing to do with religion. As the saying goes, they've heard about the Redeemer, and then they met the redeemed, and they said, no thanks. These are the folks that say, yeah, I know all about the Christian faith, I know about the church and so forth, I just don't want any part of it. And the research is showing the nuns don't want a part of the church they grew up in. But if they're given the choice, well, would you join a church community that had the things you're looking for? They're not interested in that either. What that's pointing to is a generation of folks who say, the gospel is not relevant to me. It's okay if it's for my grandparents. It's okay if it's my... It's not for me. And the presenter at Emory said, are you telling me people don't cry anymore? Are you telling me people don't celebrate laughter and have love and thanks in their hearts? Are you telling me that people aren't afraid? That they go to sleep at night and sleep well? They don't stay up with worry? Are you telling me that they have everything they need? No guilt? Of course, human beings have those things. And the gospel would be relevant to every one of them. What might we do to help that proclamation of the good news go to those places in the public and out in the streets where there is need that could transform and bring wholeness and direction and hope? I'm excited about what this congregation's doing. We're one of seven congregations in the country, Presbyterian Church, that's looking for a youth pastor. One of seven. But what we're trying to do with youth and young adults is we're trying to say, who are the nuns, as well as some of our younger folks, and how can we help that gospel traffic their lives and impact them in ways that make a difference for folks that cry and laugh and hurt and make mistakes and have hopes and live with various troubles and concerns. Charles Wesley wrote a great hymn a couple centuries ago. It's as fresh and instructive today as it was then. We are servants of God, and it's our master that we proclaim. Our job is to publish to all the world Christ's wonderful name. Woe to us if we don't. In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.